This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. We speak with cutting-edge experts and wise elders from across the globe on the issues and action our Earth is calling for. Brought to you by the Terra Nova Foundation, driving environmental change through human connection and collective action.
Today on Terra Nova Earth Talks, we are talking all things digital. If we let Earth talk, what do you think she would say to our increasingly digital ways? The word digital now encompasses such a wide array of tech, data, virtual reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence. The list goes on. It can be hard to get your head around it because the talk is so wide-ranging and the jargon increasing daily. However, there is a common foundation to all of the digital space, and that is the environment. Digital doesn't become digital today without the use of minerals, plastic, and an awful lot of energy. Also, it is common for people to talk about digital as if it is devoid of human interaction, like it is a species of its own. And lots of excited chatter about how AI could become a being. However, the reality is, for now at least, that digital refers to the tools that humans use. How we behave as humans is therefore projected through our design, our development, and implementation of the tools, and then the use of the tools day to day. So, digital is a reflection of us and how we see and interact with the environment. Today, we have the most wonderful Janet Macbull. She is an international leader in the digital space, having led multiple initiatives to ensure data, tech, AI, and other tools are developed from a sound ethical basis. And she has been pivotal to the digital sector's change-making, speaking globally on the digital issues that are front and centre for future generations, including equity, accessible finance, the role of digital twins, open source data, and many other critical issues. Her directorships span countries and include international tech companies, universities, government agencies, and not-for-profits. Welcome, Janet. It is great to have you with us today, dialing in from Melbourne, Australia.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rose, and thanks for that wonderful introduction to just set the scene, because it is about humans and it is about what we do with this technology and going forward, whatever comes through in the future for people and planet.
Yeah, it really is quite an interesting time that we're in, because it seems to me that the speed of things is really increasing. It seems to be an increasing pace. But before we dive into all things digital, I'm quite keen to just set the scene by what we mean and also how the sector, people in the sector see digital. Or do people working in the industry tend to talk to their area of interest? Like, would they use the word digital, or would they use just the specific area that they're involved in?
It's interesting, because there's a habit where people are just adding digital to something existing. So engineering, and you add digital to that, or you might say finance and you add digital to that, and it's just to sort of understand that we're talking about the same, I guess, subject matter and the same way of working and the same sector or the same product and service offering, but we're just adding a digital element. And I find that quite often, and I don't know how to get around it, because that doesn't necessarily mean that there's been a transformation, and the opportunity with digital is to look at all those things from a different lens, and not just like when we first had the internet and intranets, if anybody can remember that, people just started to put large documents and convert them to PDFs and put them on the internet. And that was like, okay, we've now gone online. And it wasn't till a little bit later that we started going, we can break down content, we can have links within content, we can have diagrams appear, we can have videos as part of content. And suddenly that one document turned into this interactive space, which made it easier to consume, which made it easier to manage, which made it easier to share. And there's also the other thing I'll say is people separate out tech and digital, and often tech is considered under the, I guess, traditional definition of technology, which is, even cars were considered technology at one point, you know, just things that have moved us forward as a society, that use certain elements. And so people often differentiate digital from tech. So it's really interesting, actually, to sometimes just listen and people go tech, data and digital.
Yeah, because that means people are coming into this space from quite a wide range of experiences. So it could simply be a business who's put something online now that they didn't have online before to complete transformation of the way an organization is operating from a digital and tech point of view, I'm guessing.
Yes. There's a big, obviously, we've just, the whole world. It's funny to say that the whole world has just gone through COVID. It's not just, New Zealand went through COVID or Australia. Mm. So the whole world's gone through COVID. And one of the first things that obviously came to mind after people thought of their own well-being and health and things like that was also, how do we keep our products and services and the economy moving, and how can people access what they need to be able to access, whether that be groceries, whether that be a doctor, whether it just be information that they used to get, at their fingertips, and both from a demand and a supply side, so businesses wanting to sell. So there was this big, it's almost like you mentioned previously, the speed. I feel like if COVID hadn't have happened, we would be in a better position when it came to digital, because we just went full throttle with moving stuff online, and we've missed the opportunity to, I wouldn't say rethink necessarily, but to think of the potential of digital when it comes to products and services and ways of working.
Yeah, it felt like people went from being in office and normal routine to suddenly being at home working without the strategy behind that, right? So suddenly all the very serious considerations that in workplaces I've been in for health and safety and, making sure your office at home was perfect and all of those things seem to kind of disappear from the conversation to simply, right, as long as you've got a laptop with Zoom, let's come on board and go digital for our business from now on. It's quite extraordinary shift, from cautious to how fast can we do it.
It was definitely an afterthought about how is this impacting your day-to-day life, and I'd imagine it's the same for businesses. Suddenly we were able to work from home, and your personal life and your private life sort of started mixing. Your business, if you're a business person, you suddenly, even more so, even though a large majority, the majority, 97% or something, I think this figure is, of small businesses in New Zealand are owned, they're small businesses, owned by a handful of people or just mum and dads, or and often you do work from home as well in the evenings. But it just became a more, it wasn't that we stopped caring. I think we just didn't have time. And so the well-being thing went out the window. Mm. And I feel like in the same way, like I'd like to see some stats on the electricity usage over that time.
Yeah, me too. And also, there are a few stats that came out, but so I'm going to slip into the environment conversation here, the number of deliveries. So suddenly the implication of going online now meant you had, a huge increase in deliveries and online ordering and, because people weren't picking up anymore.
I wonder if it was offset, like people often say it was offset by office buildings weren't on and office lighting wasn't on, computers at the office weren't on, but everybody had them on at home. People weren't commuting, but we had all the freight, we had all the freight moving around. There must be a statistic somewhere. Maybe maybe a future conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and also the energy use in homes. So how well do people actually monitor that when they're working from home is quite interesting. But I want to dive a bit deeper into that sort of digital acceleration and look at some of the other environmental issues that have come up. One of the things that appears to me is that a lot of the digital conversations, when environment's picked up, it's picked up at the end. So more in an offsetting way, you know. So it's like, right, we're using all this energy. How can we offset it? Rather than actually looking at the way digital or data is used particularly and the technology is used. What's from your point of view, how do you see it?
I absolutely agree. I think well, we've done that now, so we can, you know, we have to, it's almost this mindset to say, going back to my comment about how can we do it differently now that we're going digital, I feel like we just sort of do it and then we think afterwards, like you say, oh, okay, now can we offset these things, you know, like offset the use of energy or the footprint that we've suddenly had. But I think it comes back to good design right from the outset. So data centers going in somewhere or huge pieces of infrastructure that are going in, you know, required to power up. So it'll be the fiber network, it'll be other things, it'll be the EV charging stations, all the infrastructure that needs to go in. If that's designed straight up from the perspective of how do we minimize our footprint and how do we, and people don't often consider, like, if you're going to put a new data center in somewhere, it's not just the data center and the footprint that the data center takes up. It's actually everything that needs to happen whilst it's being built. So, you know, all of the routes that are planned for the trucks and all of the people that are suddenly needing to be housed closer, they'll need access to shops. You know, suddenly this whole built environment scenario pops out of nowhere, you know, hanging on and around the data center. And some of it might sort of peel off later. But there's an opportunity there to think about, you know, the movement of people and the placement of people for working and the movement of goods as you build something, and then thinking about even during the build process from the design's perspective, how do you minimize, you know, how do you minimize the impact that you're having, and how do you plan place, you know, based on, you know, I know there's a lot of thought that goes into where something might, you know, where the best place for something is. But when you're thinking about that, are we really thinking about current situation of place, or are we going back to historical, you know, underground maps of infrastructure or previous generations? You know, like, are we talking to iwi in that place and asking, you know, what did this land look like?
And just to plan on
that basis.
Yeah, and just to explain, iwi is name for Maori tribe in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and there's a big emphasis on actually liaising. And I think that you've hit on a point there where it's often it's the economic planning that goes into place as opposed to the environmental. And if we go environmental, then we need to go back a step and say, what is this environment that we're looking at? Is it a wetland? You know, is it a plain? What kind of environment are we in? And rather than just bulldozing out some land and draining the water, that's a common one. Let's just drain the water out of this area and not worry about the extreme events that are going to come in the future, and hope for the best, as opposed to actually having a more regenerative approach, or earth positive is what we often say at Terra Nova, which is how can we work with the environment right from the outset when we build and look at, like you're saying, the energy source, the people who are going to work there, how are they going to commute, all of those sorts of things.
And I think we can, like, I think planning processes, I know, you know, there's PlanTech now, which is actually a thing. So we can, we're in a situation where you know, we weren't here 100 years ago or even 50 years ago to say, oh, what's under the ground? How can we actually have a look and map under the ground? And how can we actually, you know, overlay past, you know, even from storytelling and gathering knowledge from storytelling and creating a virtual landscape and then overlay that against currently what's there and then think about the future. We can do all of that now. We're in a really great place when it comes to technology. So the opportunity is there to do all of that. And it's just making sure that in our processes and our thinking and our design, we are thinking of that bigger picture rather than where we've traditionally more just focused on this thing is going there. You know, what are the future implications of that building or that piece of infrastructure or that schematic of infrastructure, whether, you know, when it's bigger than one thing. But actually we really have an opportunity and sense the environment, you know, sense the current state of the environment, add it to the storytelling, visualization, scenario modeling, you know, with technology, so you can actually visualize what it was like 200-300 years ago. How did the water flow under the ground and things like that? We have the technology.
Yeah, it's incredible what we can do now. And I think that one of the things with that is actually when you're looking at the digital space is making sure that you don't disconnect from, especially if you're a service organization, that you don't disconnect from the productivity behind that service. So you take into account the whole part. Sometimes I think I'll be talking to people and they'll say, oh, that's a third party that does that, so we don't have any control over that. And it's like, whoa, you get to choose who your third parties are, you know? Like, you need to factor that in. You can't just, you know, ignore that bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about that collaboration, isn't it? It's so underestimated, the power of who you have around the table to think up how something might be done or best done, and who needs to be considered, and making room for that from a project planning perspective, making room for that from a are we ready to really listen perspective, because there's one thing to actually have it on the agenda as one of the one of the deliverables, but it's another thing to actually make room for that in the scope, and then it's another thing to actually be really genuine in terms of that engagement and make sure that it's not just a consideration up front and then you might take components of it, but it's actually an ongoing piece to say who are the stakeholders that will be impacted or could influence or could benefit, and get them around a table and you know, it's, you know, create your little team, you know, who you want to play with, how you want to play, where you want to play.
Now, you've done this on a global level as well as within countries. I quite like to speak about digital twins. Lots of people say to me, "What? I have no idea what a digital twin is. What is it?" And I think it's pretty straightforward what a digital twin is. But perhaps you could elaborate on the cleanest definition of digital twin and then how it's applied.
I think, absolutely. So I've been a fan of this idea of bringing lots of data together and creating an online version of something that's in the real world. And then helping, you know, using that to help make decisions. Like, I've been a big fan of that for decades, and it's only, you know, people call it a digital twin, and NASA uses them, and, you know, Team New Zealand used it. I think NASA was the first ones that actually did something around that with, I think, the Mars rover, or it might be something else, and they were imagining what Mars or whatever the situation or the scenario was going to be like, and they were trying to visualize some of the conditions, and then how would a object or a person, I think it might have been, navigate through that, and then what were the implications of that movement or that action. And it was all like in a game. It's like a game.
Yeah, right.
But people often think of it like that. And Team New Zealand used it to model different scenarios when they were training up their team and the boat and thinking about design. And so they're sort of some big examples. But, you know, and I've seen it as a digital replica of an oven. And so you can start, you know, in a sales process, you can start showing people, you know, maybe with augmented reality lenses or something, you pop it on and you can see how do you use an oven, and you can say, I want to put a cake in there. This is the consistency of the cake. You pick a few options and it tells you how long it might take to bake, and then you can see it rising, and it's sort of just it's a digital version of something in the real world. And people get fixated with that and they just think, well, that's digital twin, and then they underestimate what this thing really is. And so, you know, and it's about buildings. You can have a digital replica of a building. You know, Wellington's done the digital replica of the whole of Wellington, and I've played with the VR goggles there and looked at it, and you can see the sea level rising. And if you're punching your street name and number in the libraries there, I think it is, actual citizens can just, you know, engage with this this visual version of their street, and then click another option and see what the impact of sea level rise might be. And the idea was that sharing of insight and knowledge to help people make decisions, help councillors make decisions. And it's powerful. It's absolutely powerful because of the way we consume content, and it's better than a number of reports or, you know, drilling into some database and putting in an address on a website and waiting for it to toggle through a few different options to show you. You can't. It's
visual. It's right there.
Yeah, it's visual.
But you can see immediately the effects. Yeah,
and when you add the VR, you're actually immersed in that experience. And I love it. I love all of that. And I'm not underestimating, like, this. That is absolutely powerful. But the true potential of digital twin is the amalgamation of all of the data, and the fact that you don't have to create a lake of data and pull in. So for example, if you wanted a twin of a place, what's happening underground, what's happening on the ground, what's happening in the air, what's happening with the movement of people around that, all of that data that can be collected, you can keep it all separated in a federated model, but bring it back together in order to be able to then integrate the data and then build a capability that then, yes, can visualize what you're trying to, you know, and depending on the stakeholders that you're trying to communicate with. But what it allows is the bringing together of data, so the integration of that data and the interoperability of data. People often think about interoperability of devices. That's one thing. And then the sixth, so that's a capability to bring it together. And then the capability in the sense of analytics, so you can run advanced analytics on that then, and so you can suddenly
run scenarios.
machine learning. You can run, so much, like, just, I'll just call it advanced analytics. I won't go into all the different types of things you can do. So again, it's a capability. And then the other one, which we don't talk about a lot in New Zealand, but it's a big thing overseas, is a connected digital twin. So a connected digital twin means not only is it consuming data, and it doesn't necessarily have to be real time, but it's better real time. So not only is it ingesting or connected to data, one way, but it also is triggering something back in the real world. So if you can imagine in a machining scenario in a big factory, you're monitoring all of these machines, and you're monitoring the performance of the machines, and the conveyor belt's about to give out, and your AI, your digital model has got some built-in AI, and it's predicted that that's about to happen. So the prescriptive element then is that it then says back to the machine, switch to the other conveyor belt. It automatically triggers that.
And when we apply this to the environment, it can be, and it's becoming a lot more prevalent in the in climate extreme events, where we can pick up information about fires, which is something that the city council in this city has been activating, some real-time data coming in so that we know if there's a fire about to kick off. And therefore put into play, you know, emergency services. And you mentioned before flooding, which is utterly key. Tsunami would be a similar scenario. But they tend to be, so that's getting definitely more popular. I'm quite keen to see, do you think this is possible, where we actually do far more scenarios about which you touched on before, is actually being able to look at the environment over history and looking at how it is likely to change from the information that we know at the minute. Of course, everything is pretty dynamic at the minute, so it's, AI is going to be learning very quickly and changing frequently. But can we actually build digital twins that actually embrace the environmental elements so that they come through. So, for instance, if we're looking at a city design, can we actually say, right, this is a wetland, this is how it's looked over the many years, this is where the underground streams are, this is how this, you know, this is how it looks underneath, and or could look if there weren't buildings here. Can you do that kind of visualization?
Yep. Yeah. It's just data. So there's a couple of things to that. So first of all, what people consider to be data. And so I remember we were engaging with some iwi up north around a lake at one point a couple of years ago. And the topic, you know, the conversation was about sensing the level of water in the lake, the quality of the water in the lake, things that you can do with the Internet of Things technology. And, you know, it's pretty some pretty basic sensors, and there were some pretty advanced sensors in there. But, you know, it was all really great. But then someone from the tribe just spoke up and said, you know, that's what you think of as data, but what we think of, which you would call data, is all the information and insight that you can gather from storytelling. Mm. So a simple story of, you know, back in, you know, I don't want to say how many generations ago, but this lake here fed a whole village. Mm. So you can extrapolate out from that. What was the condition of what was the level of the water? How many species were potentially in there, you know, living and breathing? How many plants were in there? The fact that it was a sustainable environment that kept giving. So how could you translate that into data? So that's the first thing. So absolutely you can. The digital twin or digital model just brings in data from different sources, and then you can manage how that looks, how that comes together. You can manage things like multi-data sovereignty with that. You can manage, you know, federated data model applications within that. You can all of that, but it comes down to what the data is. And the second thing I'll say is so what is the data? And then secondly, the quality, I would say, of that data, and the fact that, and by quality, I also mean how true is it, and how removed, you know, how, so if you think about health data, you could say that even the information that we currently have about the implications of a certain drug on a certain type of, you know, or a certain type of surgery, and the statistics around, you know, the likelihood of success given a person is of this age, this background, and all that. I mean, that all, making a decision on that is quite dangerous, because we're all unique, and the bias comes into it. So it's the same with the environment. So not only what is data, but what is the quality of that data? And then the third thing, which is a bit more techie, is how have you structured the bringing together of that data? And people often underestimate the engineering that needs to go into bringing all the data together, so you can have the federated data models, you can have the real-time data coming in, you can have the lakes, you can have the connected environment. So absolutely you can, if you think about those things. What is data? Making sure that the data, there's quality of data, and including around bias, and thirdly, that you architect it correctly.
So we could pick up so many of these things. And have another whole podcast on just one of the elements that you've picked up on there. But what I am very mindful of two implications there is, which we'll have to look at another time, Janet. can't do everything in half an hour. But one of the key things is back to the original kickoff with this, for this podcast, which is this is just a tool. So how does wisdom come into the play? And also recognizing that, you know, data is only as good as the way that the data has been collected and recorded. So not getting too hard up on that. But we're going to close off now. I just got a final question for you, though. It's, you know, a small one for the last little bit. What do you see as the most critical shift required in the digital space at the moment when it comes to the environment?
Making a space for it. So I think it's going back to what I said previously, it's let's align digital transformation with the environment, because you underestimate the impact that we're having through the process of even building what we're building, let alone through what we're using, and then the potential of, you know, the implications of all that digital technology, even scaling it out from there. So having that element of the environmental impact built into the design of digital.
That's, yeah, wonderful. Just a small job then for us all.
Yeah,
I think one of the
things, we do other things. Yeah. We do security by design. It should be environment by design, you know, and it should be, you know, you come up with a term for it and you can coin it.
And I think the key for anyone who is working in this area, whether it's government, not-for-profit or business, is that you look at this right in the beginning. Don't try and do it as you go along and hope for the best. And if you're an existing organization looking at the digital space, try and draw a line in the sand to actually do a review of where you're at. And that gives you the space then to look at these things thoroughly rather than in pieces, because you'll be playing catch up if you don't. forevermore.
The only other thing I'll add there is partner. Just don't try and do it yourself. Try and find the organizations that are working in those spaces and collaborate, because it's for the greater good, and it just expands the pie, whatever that saying is. But it needs to be built into the design, and don't underestimate the impact on the environment, even if it's, you know, it's an internal machine-driven solution that's within a factory that's already there, and you're thinking, I'm not increasing the impact of what I'm doing, I'm just digitizing something that's already here. Where do you think the cloud, who do you think powers the cloud?
Yeah. Well, wonderful, Jenna. It's been so great to have you here. For anyone who wants to connect with you or to seek advice or just simply to connect, how can they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Just look me up on LinkedIn is probably the best way to get a hold of me, to be honest.
And we will have links on Terra Nova, the website, and also with this podcast, so you can connect with Jenna through that way. And also, if you're looking at connectivity, as Janet said, so collectively trying to put things in place from an environmental perspective, do get in contact with us at Terra Nova as well. Thank you so much, Janet. That has been wonderful talking to you, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of the day in Melbourne, Australia.
Thank you. Thanks, Rose. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Terra Nova Earth Talks. For more information on the content and links from this podcast, go to the Terra Nova website. That's terranova.foundation. To listen to other interviews in this series, go to the Plains FM website. That's plainsfm.org.nz. Search for Terra Nova Earth Talks. Also on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Bye for now.